4. News Archive. They weren't done, couldn't be done, not yet. Wesley, in particular, was anxious to press on. Although he hadn't slept for more than 3 hours at a stretch in days, he felt wide awake, energized. He and Robbie walked back to his apartment while Don went home to help his wife put the boys to bed. When that was done, he joined them at Wesley's place for an extended skull session. Wesley said he'd order some food.
Good, Don said, but be careful. Chinese just doesn't taste the same.
For a wonder, Wesley found he could actually laugh.
So this is what an English instructor's apartment looks like, Robbie said, gazing around. Man, I dig all the books.
Good, Wesley said. I loan to people who bring back. Keep it in mind.
I will. My parents have never been, you know, great readers. A few magazines, some diet books, a self-help manual or two. That's all. I might have been the same way if not for you. Just banging my head out on the football field, you know, with nothing ahead except maybe teaching P.E. in Giles County. That's in Tennessee. Yeehaw.
Wesley was touched by this. Probably because he'd been hurled through so many emotional hoops just lately. Thanks, he said. Just remember, there's nothing wrong with a good loud yeehaw. That's part of who you are, too. Both parts are equally valid. He thought of Ellen, ripping deliverance out of his hands and hurling it across the room. And why? Because she hated books? No, because he hadn't been listening when she needed him to. Hadn't it been Fritz Leiber, the great fantasist and science fiction writer, who had called books the scholar's mistress? And when Ellen needed him, hadn't he been in the arms of his other lover, the one who made no demands other than on his vocabulary, and always took him in?
Wes, what were those other things on the IRV functions menu?
At first, Wesley didn't know what the kid was talking about. Then he remembered that there had been a couple of other items. He'd been so fixated on the books submenu that he had forgotten the other two.
Well, let's see,
he said, and turned the Kindle on. Every time he did this, he expected either the experimental menu or the IRV functions menu to be gone. That would also happen in a fantasy story or a Twilight Zone episode. But they were still right there.
News Archive and Local, Robbie said.
Huh. Local's under construction. Better watch out. Traffic fines double.
What?
Never mind. Just goofing with you. Try the News Archive.
Wesley selected it. The screen blanked. After a few moments, a message appeared. Welcome to the News Archive. Only the New York Times is available at this time. Your price is $1, 4 downloads. $10, 50 downloads. $100, 800 downloads. Select with cursor, your account will be billed.
Wesley looked at Robbie, who shrugged. I can't tell you what to do, but if my credit card wasn't being billed, in this world anyway, I'd spend the 100.
Wesley thought he had a point, although he wondered what the other Wesley, if indeed there was one, was going to think when he opened his next MasterCard bill. He highlighted the $100, 800 line and pushed the select button. This time the paradox laws didn't come up. Instead, the new message invited him to choose date and use appropriate fields.
You do it, he said, and pushed the Kindle across the kitchen table to Robbie.
This was getting easier to do, and he was glad, and obsession about keeping the Kindle in his own hands was a complication he didn't need, understandable as it was. Robbie thought for a moment, then typed in January 21st, 2009. In the IRV field, he selected 100000.
$1 million, he said. Why not?
And pushed the button. The screen went blank, then produced a message reading, Enjoy your selection. A moment later, the front page of the New York Times appeared. They bent over the screen, reading silently until there was a knock at the door.
That'll be Don, Wesley said. I'll let him in.
Robbie Henderson didn't reply. He was still transfixed.
Getting cold out there, Don said as he came in. And there's a wind knocking all the leaves off the...
He studied Wesley's face.
What? Or should I say, what now?
Come and see, Wesley said. Don went into Wesley's book-lined living room study, where Robbie remained bent over the Kindle. The kid looked up and turned the screen so Don could see it. There were blank patches where the photos should have gone, each with the message, "Image unavailable." But the headline was big and black. Now it's her turn. And below it, the subhead, "Hillary Clinton takes oath, assumes role as 44th president."
Looks like she made it after all, Wesley said. At least in her 1 million.
And check out who she's replacing, Robbie said, and pointed to the name. It was Albert Arnold Gore. An hour later, when the doorbell rang, they didn't jump, but rather looked around like men startled from a dream. Wesley went downstairs and paid the delivery guy, who had arrived with a loaded pizza from Harry's and a six-pack of Pepsi. They ate at the kitchen table, bent over the Kindle. Wesley put away 3 slices himself, a personal best, with no awareness of what he was eating. They didn't use up the 800 downloads they had ordered, nowhere near it, but in the next 4 hours, they skimmed enough stories from various ERs to make their heads ache. Wesley felt as though his mind were aching. From the nearly identical looks he saw on the faces of the other two, pale cheeks, avid eyes in bruised sockets, crazed hair, he guessed he wasn't alone. Looking into one alternate reality would have been challenging enough. Here were over 10 million, and although most appeared to be similar, not one was exactly the same. The inauguration of the 44th President of the United States was only one example, but a powerful one. They checked it in 2 dozen different ERs before getting tired and moving on. Fully 17 front pages on January 21st of 2009 announced Hillary Clinton as the new president. In 14 of them, Bill Richardson of New Mexico was her vice president. In 2, it was Joe Biden. In 1, it was a senator none of them had heard of, Linwood Speck of New Jersey.
"He always says no when someone else wins a top spot," Don said.
"Who always says no?" Robbie asked. "Obama?"
"Yeah. He always gets asked, and he always says no."
"It's in character," Wesley said. "And while events change, character never seems to."
"You can't say that for sure," Don said. "We have a minuscule sample compared to the...
He laughed feebly.
"You know, the whole thing. All the worlds of ER."
Barack Obama had been elected in 6 ERs. Mitt Romney had been elected once, with John McCain as his running mate. He had run against Obama, who had been tapped after Hillary was killed in a motorcade accident late in the campaign. They saw not a single mention of Sarah Palin. Wesley wasn't surprised. He thought that if they stumbled on her, it would be more by luck than by probability, and not just because Mitt Romney showed up more often as the Republican nominee than John McCain did. Palin had always been an outsider, a long shot, the one nobody expected. Robbie wanted to check the Red Sox. Wesley felt it was a waste of time, but Don came down on the kid's side, so Wesley agreed. The two of them checked the sports pages for October in 10 different ERs, plugging in dates from 1918 to 2009.
"This is depressing," Robbie said after the 10th try.
Don Allman agreed.
"Why?" Wesley asked. "They win lots of times."
"But there's no rhyme or reason to it," Robbie said.
"And no curse," Don said. "They always win just enough to avoid it, which is sort of boring."
"What curse?" Wesley was mystified. Don opened his mouth to explain, then sighed.
"Never mind," he said. "It would take too long and you wouldn't get it anyway."
"Look on the bright side," Robbie said. "The Yankees are always there, so it isn't all luck."
"Yeah," Don said glumly. "The military-industrial complex of the sporting world."
"Sorry. Does anyone want that last slice?"
Don and Wes shook their heads. Robbie scarfed it and said,
"Why not check the big casino before we all decide we're nuts and check ourselves into Central State?"
"What big casino might that be, Yoda?" Don asked.
The JFK assassination, Robbie said. Mr. Tolman says that was the seminal event of the 20th century, even more important than the assassination of Archduke Ferdinand in Sarajevo. I thought seminal events usually happen in bed, but hey, I came to college to learn. Mr. Tolman's in the history department.
I know who Hugh Tolman is, Don said. He's a goddamn commie and he never laughs at my jokes.
But he could be right about the Kennedy assassination, Wesley said. Let's look.
They pursued the John Kennedy in Dallas thread until nearly 11 o'clock, while college students hooted unnoticed below them on their way to and from the local beer pits. They checked over 70 versions of the New York Times for November 23, 1963. And although the story was never the same, one fact seemed undeniable to all of them. Whether he missed Kennedy, wounded Kennedy, or killed Kennedy, it was always Lee Harvey Oswald, and he always acted alone.
The Warren Report was right, Don said. For once the bureaucracy did its job, I'm gobsmacked.
In some ERs, that day in November had passed with no assassination stories, either attempted or successful. Sometimes Kennedy decided not to visit Dallas after all. Sometimes he did, and his motorcade was uneventful. He arrived at the Dallas Trademark, gave his $100-a-plate luncheon speech.
God, things were cheap back in the day, weren't they?
Robbie remarked, and flew off into the sunset. This was the case in 88,416. Wesley began to plug in more dates from that What he saw filled him with awe and horror and wonder and sorrow. In 88,416, Kennedy had seen the folly of Vietnam and had pulled out over the vehement objections of Robert McNamara, his Secretary of Defense. McNamara quit and was replaced by a man named Bruce Palmer, who resigned his rank of U.S. Army General to take the job. The civil rights turmoil was milder than when Lyndon Johnson was president, and there were almost no riots in the American cities, partly because in 88,416, Martin Luther King wasn't assassinated in Memphis or anywhere else. In this JFK was elected for a second term. In 1968, Edmund Muskie of Maine won the presidency in a landslide over Nelson Rockefeller. By then, the outgoing president was hardly able to walk without the aid of crutches and said his first priority was going to be major back surgery. Robbie ignored that and fixed on a story that had to do with Kennedy's last White House party. The Beatles had played, but the concert ended early when drummer Pete Best suffered a seizure and had to be taken to Washington, D.C. hospital.
Holy shit, Don whispered. What happened to Ringo?
Guys, Wesley said, yawning, I have to go to bed. I'm dying here. Check one more, Robbie said. 4,121,989. It's my birthday, gotta be lucky.
But it wasn't. When Wesley selected the and added a date, January 20, 1973, not quite at random, what came up instead of enjoy your selection was this. No times this after November 19, 1962.
Oh, my God, Wesley said, and clapped a hand to his mouth. Dear sweet God. What? Robbie asked. What is it?
I think I know,
Don said. He tried to take the pink Kindle. Wesley, who guessed he had gone pale, but probably not as pale as he felt inside, put a hand over Don's.
No, he said. I don't think I can bear it.
Bear what? Robbie nearly shouted.
Didn't Hugh Tolman cover the Cuban Missile Crisis? Don asked. Didn't you get that far yet?
What missile crisis? Was it something to do with Castro?
Don was looking at Wesley.
I don't really want to see either, he said. But I won't sleep tonight unless I make sure, and I don't think you will either.
Okay, Wesley said, and thought, not for the first time either, that curiosity, rather than rage, was the true bane of the human spirit.
You'll have to do it, though. My hands are trembling too much.
Don filled in the fields for November 19, 1962. the Kindle told him to enjoy his selection. But he didn't. None of them did. The headlines were stark and huge. NYC toll surpasses 6 million. Manhattan decimated by radiation. Russia said to be obliterated. Losses in Europe and Asia incalculable. Chinese launch 40 ICBMs.
"Turn it off," Robbie said in a small, sick voice. "It's like that song says, I don't want to see no more."
Don said,
"Look on the bright side, you two. It seems we dodged the bullet in most of the errors, including this one."
But his voice wasn't quite steady.
"Robbie's right," Wesley said.
He had discovered that the final issue of the New York Times in 4,121,989 was only 3 pages long, and every article was death.
"Turn it off. I wish I'd never seen that damn thing in the first place."
"Too late now,"
Robbie said. And how right he was. They went downstairs together and stood on the sidewalk in front of Wesley's building. Main Street was almost deserted now. The rising wind moaned around the buildings and rattled late November leaves along the sidewalks. A trio of drunk students was stumbling back toward Fraternity Row, singing what might have been Paradise City.
"I can't tell you what to do. It's your gadget. But if it was mine, I'd get rid of it," Don said. "It'll suck you in."
Wesley thought of telling him he'd already had this idea, but didn't.
"We'll talk about it tomorrow."
"Nope," Don said. "I'm driving the wife and kids to Frankfurt for a wonderful 3-day weekend at my in-laws. Susie Montanari's taking my classes, and after this little seminar tonight, I'm delighted to be getting away. Robbie, drop you somewhere?"
"Thanks, but no need. I share an apartment with a couple other guys 2 blocks up the street over Susan and Nan's place."
"Isn't that a little noisy?" Wesley asked. Susan and Nan's was the local cafe, and opened at 6 a.m. 7 days a week.
"Most days I sleep right through it," Robbie flashed a grin. "Also, when it comes to the rent, the price is right."
"Good deal. Night, you guys."
Don started for his Tercel, then turned back.
"I intend to kiss my kids before I turn in. Maybe it'll help me get to sleep. That last story..."
He shook his head.
"I could have done without that. No offense, Robbie, but stick your birthday up your ass."
They watched his diminishing taillights, and Robbie said thoughtfully,
"Nobody ever told me to stick my birthday before."
"I'm sure he wouldn't want you to take it personally, and he's probably right about the Kindle, you know. It's fascinating, too fascinating, but useless in any practical sense." Robbie stared at him, wide-eyed.
"You're calling access to thousands of undiscovered novels by the great masters of the craft useless? Jesus, what kind of English teacher are you?"
Wesley had no comeback, especially when he knew that, late or not, he'd probably be reading more of Cortland's Dogs before turning in.
"Besides," Robbie said, "it might not be entirely useless. You could type up one of those books and send it into a publisher. You ever think of that? You know, submit it under your own name, become the next big thing. They'd call you the heir to Vonnegut or Roth or whoever."
It was an attractive idea, especially when Wesley thought of the useless scribbles in his briefcase. But he shook his head.
"It'd probably violate the paradox laws, whatever they are. More importantly, it would eat at me like acid from the inside out."
He hesitated, not wanting to sound prissy, but wanting to articulate what felt like the real reason for not doing such a thing.
"I would feel ashamed."
The kid smiled.
"You're a good dude, Wesley."
They were walking in the direction of Robbie's apartment now, the leaves rattling around their feet, a quarter moon flying through the wind-driven clouds overhead.
"You think so?"
"I do.
And so does Coach Silverman."
Wesley stopped, caught by surprise.
"What do you know about me and Coach Silverman?"
"Personally, not a thing, but you must know Josie's on the team. Josie Quinn from class?"
"Of course I know Josie," the one who'd sounded like a kindly anthropologist when they'd been discussing the Kindle. And yes, he had known she was a lady meerkat, unfortunately one of the subs who usually got into the game only if it was a total blowout.
Josie says Coach has been really sad since you and her broke up. Grouchy, too. She makes him run all the time and kicked one girl right off the team.
That was before we broke up.
Thinking, in a way, that's why we broke up.
Does the whole team know about us?
Robbie Henderson looked at him as though he were mad.
If Josie knows, they all know.
How? Because Ellen wouldn't have told them. Briefing the team on your love life was not a coachly thing to do.
How do women know anything? Robbie asked. They just do.
Are you and Josie Quinn an item, Robbie?
We're going in the right direction.
Good night, Wes. I'm going to sleep in tomorrow. No classes on Friday. But if you drop by Susan and Nance for lunch, come on up and knock on my door.
I might do that, Wesley said.
Good night, Robbie. Thanks for being one of the Three Stooges.
I'd say the pleasure was all mine, but I have to think about that.
Instead of reading Hemingway when he got back, Wesley stuffed the Kindle in his briefcase. Then he took out the mostly blank bound notebook and ran his hand over its pretty cover.
For your book ideas, Ellen had said.
And it had to have been an expensive present. Too bad it was going to waste.
I could still write a book, he thought. Just because I haven't in any of the other errs doesn't mean I couldn't hear.
It was true. He could be the Sarah Palin of American letters, because sometimes long shots came in. Both for good and for ill. He undressed, brushed his teeth, then called the English department and left a message for the secretary to cancel his one morning class.
Thanks, Marilyn. Sorry to put this on you, but I think I'm coming down with the flu.
He added an unconvincing cough and hung up.
He thought he would lie sleepless for hours, thinking of all those other worlds. But in the dark, they seemed as unreal as actors when you saw them on a movie screen. They were big up there, often beautiful, too, but they were still only shadows thrown by light. Maybe the worlds were like that, too.
What seemed real in this post-midnight hour was the sound of the wind, the beautiful sound of the wind, telling tales of Tennessee, where it had been earlier this evening. Lulled by it, Wesley fell asleep, and he slept deeply and long. There were no dreams, and when he woke up, sunshine was flooding his bedroom. For the first time since his own undergraduate days, he had slept until almost 11 in the morning.